There's a few key points I want to make about public narrative and how it works, and then we're going to get into seeing some examples and practices. The first is this chart over here. Now, I use these charts a lot to try to illustrate these concepts, and the first chart is really about what I've already mentioned, that what I discovered in my work in organizing in social movements was that there were two kinds of leadership challenges, a strategic challenge and a motivational challenge, and it took both. When I came back to school, I discovered that in psychology, they, in fact, recognized this distinction, particularly in the work of Jerome Bruner, between the two ways in which we map the world. One is cognitive, with the head, where we map the world as it is, the patterns, the connections between things, and so forth. And that's very important for understanding how to use the world's resources in purposeful ways, strategy, for example. But the second way we map the world is affectively or emotionally. We also map the objects and experiences and people in the world with a value. This is inspiring. This is frightening. This is hopeful. This is discouraging. This is disgusting. This is promising. And it's that whole second kind of mapping of the emotional meaning of the world that is that second side. And so the first side is very helpful for doing strategic work and understanding how resources are deployed. But the second side is critical for doing motivational work. And this is the side on which narrative exists. Now, more specifically, it's a way of understanding that the value we attach to things is not an intellectual concept, it's an emotional commitment, it's an emotional experience. In other words, values are emotional in content. And because it's what actually moves us. It's not what we think maybe could, but what actually moves us to action. In the Christian tradition, St. Augustine writes about the distinction between knowing the good, which is fine, and loving it, which he says loving the good is what inspires action on the good. So I'm talking about the sources of loving the good, not simply knowing it. And that lies in the emotional value that we attach to people, things, and experiences in the world. And in order to make choices, it's not that we need to banish emotion, but rather we need to engage right emotion. This whole idea that reason can somehow dominate emotion that comes very much out of Western thinking of the Enlightenment is just plain wrong. And finally, our social scientists are beginning to recognize that it's much more, there is reason and emotion involved in everything we do. And so the challenge is to figure out how to create the emotional conditions under which we are much more likely to act in constructive kinds of ways. They've done research on people with damaged amygdalas, the part of the brain where we experience a lot of emotion. And with the rest of the brain intact, you know what they're able to do. They can reason options, but you know what they can't do? They can't make decisions, because the decisions depend on emotional information. They're value judgments, and value judgments require emotional information in order to be effective. So the point here that I want to make then is that the connection between our values and our capacity to act on those values is emotion. Now, that takes to this chart over here, which is about how that emotional dynamic works.